insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, I will be going to your phone calls here in just a second. First, though, this is courtesy of Catholic World Report, their website, CatholicWorldReport.com. Abortion activists create a children's abortion book. Yay! Yay. Two women who call themselves abortion doulas are authoring a children's book about abortion. Carly Maines and M, I guess that's the only way to identify the second person, recently designed a new children's book called What's an Abortion Anyway? The book will be available to young children by the fall of 2021, described as a non-judgmental book about abortion for children, because every child needs to know all about that, right? The creators say they, quote, believe in building a world for kids and adults where abortion is normalized as another outcome of pregnancy, just like miscarriage and birth. Yay! Cookies, milk, and abortion! During a live reading, the two revealed the book's contents online. Some people have an abortion, they read in their book. An abortion is when someone decides, and you notice they don't say woman or mom. It's just someone. Because, hey, you get it. An abortion is when someone decides to stop growing their pregnancy. Kind of like a carrot in the backyard garden, right? An abortion is when someone decides to stop growing their pregnancy. There are many different ways that people who are pregnant can have an abortion. Some people see a doctor who does a special procedure to remove the pregnancy from inside a person's body. Other people take medicine to stop the pregnancy from growing bigger. You notice it's not called a child or a fetus or anything like that. It's just a pregnancy. And they've been crowdfunding. They have a goal that they list on their crowdfunding website. They want to give a copy to every abortion clinic, and they want to donate 300 copies to libraries. A version in Spanish will also be available. Yay! They said they were inspired to publish their book after failing to find any other books about abortion made for children under 13 years of old. Huh. What a weird thing that there just aren't any books for little kids about abortion. So they're going to fill that gap. I'll reserve comment for when you call me. 888-914-9149. Let's go to, let's go to Yoli in Anaheim. Hi, Yoli.
Oh, yes. Hi. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Yoli.
Yes, hi. I strongly believe that parents, legal guardians, and students have control and can stop corruption, racism, transgender being taught in schools.
It's too late. It's too late now, baby. It's too late.
Oh, wait,
but we really did try to make it.
Peaceful protesting, homeschool, or start having walkouts. Because if there's no students in the classroom, then there's no paychecks for the teachers.
True, but Yoli, this is way too late in the game for that. If that were being done with some significant number of people 40 years ago, sure. But now, who else are you going to get to do that? So let's say your child goes to the local public middle school where there are 1,500 students. Do you think you're going to be able to get 100, 200, 500 parents to pull their kids out of school? I don't think you can. You might find a handful who will do it, but they'll just laugh at you. It won't affect anything because it's too far gone now in the public school system. So I like your mention of homeschooling. Good Catholic schools are also a great option for those who have them nearby. I encourage that. But I don't see the public school system being salvaged at this point. The gangrene has gone too far. I'm not trying to burst your balloon, but the advice you're giving, Yoli, would have been great if people had been doing that 40 years ago. But the horses are out of the barn now, so we have to use different techniques.
Prayer.
That too. Yes, indeed, Yoli. Thanks for reminding us about prayer. Thank you. Let's go now to, let's go to Sherry in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I was just calling about the caller that called previously about homosexuality.
Okay.
And my belief is when we have a child that comes to us struggling with same-sex attraction, that our first message to them should be that God loves them.
Yes.
And that God created them to be this way. Our first message should not be, it's sinful, that lifestyle is horrible, you can't, you know, don't be, you should be heterosexual. And I just feel like that man was calling to hear that the child was loved, and I didn't feel that that was being, that came across that way.
Oh, what a pity. Well, if you listen to this program long enough, you'll hear me say love, excuse me, love and compassion over and over and over again. It always has to be based on love. But remember this, Sherry, it's not really love if you're not telling someone the truth. Now, obviously, you have to say the truth in a way that's not going to brutalize the other person, but you have to tell them the truth. And so it would be, in my view, a deficient form of parental love if mom or dad were to just pretend as if everything were okay and not give good advice to the child who's struggling with this issue or who has these temptations. I mean, if you had a daughter who, you know, she's, let's say, 15 years old, and she reveals to you, Mom, I think I'm really fat, when in fact she's not. She's wasting away because she has, let's say, anorexia. Would you say, oh, honey, well, God made you this way, so let's, okay, yeah, sure. If you think you're fat, well, then let's cut back on the food. Or would you say, honey, no, you're not fat, and we need to get you some help because we love you. Which would you do in her case?
Well, I think that's kind of a bad comparison between being overweight and being homosexual.
No, I'm not saying that she is overweight. I'm saying she has a perception of herself that may not, in fact, be accurate. And all I'm saying is, if you really loved her, and I'm sure you would you seek to get her some help with this, or would you just play into it and go along with it because that's how she sees herself?
Well, again, I think that anorexia is a mental health issue, and homosexuality is not a mental health issue. And I think that you really can't compare the two, just like you can't compare promiscuous heterosexuals to homosexuals that are in committed relationships.
But I haven't done that. So that's a red herring there. But I'm not sure if you're aware, Sherry, but the American Psychiatric Association did indeed regard homosexuality as a disorder until fairly recently when it changed its position on that topic. So you're right about that. Technically speaking, it's not regarded as such anymore, but for a long time it was. But I don't have the wherewithal to debate the psychiatry or the psychology of it. I'm just saying that your point is correct, that we should always approach our children with love and help them as best we can with their struggles, whatever they may be. But if this is a moral struggle, it doesn't do any favor to your child to pretend as if it's okay and to encourage them to do something that will actually be harmful for them.
I had a close family member who is homosexual, and when he came out to the family went to the priest, and the priest first response was, God still loves this person, yeah, and God will protect this person. And I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
I thought that
it's self-evidently true. I agree with it.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just feel like sometimes when parents call in, they're very desperate. They're very desperate because we love our church more than anything in the world. And it just breaks my heart when self-control or other things are talked about instead of, no, and this person is loved, and you can love this person even if they act on their homosexual tendencies.
Well, Sherry, maybe we're talking past each other. You don't have any disagreement from me on that point. But if you want only the message of love devoid of any truth, then that's deficient. See, I'm arguing for both and, not either or. I'm not interested in saying, hey, kid, here's the truth, you know, take it or leave it. No, this has to be a message of love. And as I've said before, people have asked me, well, what if one of your kids became gay, or what if your kids decided to be transgender? I'd say, well, I'd love them as much as I do now. There's nothing that my children can do to make me stop loving them. I'll always love them, and I'll always accept them for who they are, but I'm also going to speak the truth to them because I love them. And I wonder if maybe that's the part where you and I disagree, because love is absolutely essential, but love without truth is deficient and can be counterproductive, I think.
Can a practicing homosexual go to heaven?
Well, everything that Jesus and St. Paul and all of the revelation that we have on that topic says no. I mean, it's very clear that those who are thieves and murderers and drunkards and sexual perverts and adulterers and fornicators and liars, I mean, these lists are given more than once in the New Testament, and over again we're told that people who willingly do these things and are not repentant before they die, they will not go to heaven.
I feel like Paul says that, and I know it's the Holy Spirit talking through Paul, but I don't feel mm-hmm. like Jesus ever addresses homosexuality specifically.
He did specifically in Matthew chapter 19 when he's talking about divorce, and he says, do you not know that in the beginning God made them male and female? And this is why a man leaves his family and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. So when it came down to the very definition of not just marriage, but also the sexual activity between a man and a woman, Jesus gave the paradigm set down by God. So he did speak about it. I mean, Jesus didn't talk about nuclear war, but he also talked about how we should follow the commandments, including thou shalt not kill. So he was specific about that as a paradigm for human interaction in a sexual way, man and woman.
I love the church so much, and I just have a really hard time with this issue. It's very personal to me, and I just mm-hmm. want, you know, other Catholics to know that there are other Catholics out there struggling with this, and mm-hmm. You know, just a message of love, which I think we agree.
Yeah, we do on that. That's for sure. Do you have someone in your life? I mean, if this is too personal, feel free not to answer, but do you have someone mm-hmm. in your life that you care about deeply who's going through this?
Yes. Yes. I wouldn't say okay. going through this. I would say is homosexual. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's saying the same thing. But so out of love for that person, I mean, if you believe what Jesus said, I'm assuming you do, mm-hmm. if you believe what St. Mm-hmm. Paul said, are you struggling with being able to convey that message in a way that's still loving? Or have you felt that maybe you just should not say anything about that?
That's a good question. I think I just feel like I am not in a position to judge and say, if you do this, you will not go to heaven. I just feel like I'm not in that position.
Mm-hmm. I can relate. You know, it's mm-hmm. not my decision mm-hmm. to make. I'm not the judge of anybody.
Right.
I can relate to that.
Right. Well, I appreciate you so much talking me through this, because it is extremely painful for people who have children and yeah. loved ones who are homosexuals. And a lot of people are leaving the church because of it. And that breaks my heart. You know, it's the lifeline. The church, the Catholic Church, is the lifeline, the, you know, mm-hmm. one true church. And
I agree. So we do the best we can to try to help people along the way. We're not here to judge them. We are here to help them. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe if you thought of it this way, Sherry, I used that analogy earlier. I don't know if you heard me, but I was talking about, let's say that it wasn't a sexual issue. Let's say it was just another activity like drinking alcohol. And if you were to substitute those two categories, what about this? And you don't have to answer me. I'm not trying to, you know, get you to say uncle or anything like that. I'm just offering you something to think about as another way to look at it. So let's say that you have a dear friend or a loved one who had a drinking problem. And you brought it up and you said you shouldn't do that. And she said, well, it makes me happy. And this is how God made me. For as long as I can remember, I've enjoyed alcohol. And my friends do this. And I may even, for all I know, have a genetic predisposition to it. And I like it. It makes me happy. And God made me this way. And I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm a consenting adult. I'm not hurting anybody. I would never do anything to jeopardize anyone else. And it's legal. And yet you would, I would guess you would probably say, but still, it's not good for you. And it wouldn't be unloving for you to say that. It wouldn't be, you know, not loving the person. I think it would be really loving the person, to love them so much that even though this was a real, you know, touchy subject, a really delicate and potentially explosive topic, you would be doing a good thing and a loving thing to say, well, nonetheless, you know I love you, you know I'll always love you. But because I love you, I have to tell you this is bad for you. I think that part right there, if we were to use that as a parallel, is maybe where many people are afraid to go because they're afraid to lose a relationship. And I don't want to lose that relationship with any of my friends or loved ones. I'll work as hard as I can possibly to protect that. But ultimately, we can't sacrifice telling them the truth. Anyway, I think you get where I'm coming from, Sherry. You're a great lady. I'm glad you called me, and I hope you'll call me back. I appreciate it. Let's take a quick time out and come back. The number is 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Talk about changes. The communist Chinese government has lifted its short-lived two-child policy after a long time of enforcing its one-child policy, forced abortions, etc., etc. It was just a miserable, wretched, horrible situation for couples in China because the Chinese government miscalculated so badly and they thought they had a population problem with too many people. So not that long ago, a few years ago, they redirected and they said, okay, you can now have two kids. Well, they've changed that. Now they're saying you can have three kids. They scrapped this policy back in 2016, the one-child policy. Reuters has a very interesting article on this topic. We'll get it posted for you about how China is lifting this cap that they previously had in place. And the reason is because they're just now realizing, or at least they have been for the last decade or so, that this was a disastrous policy that's actually harming them financially. It's harming them economically. And there's also a massive imbalance between males and females in the population. There aren't enough girls for all the boys. So if you're interested in seeing how this utter abject failure of a policy in China, you know, big surprise, right? They're communists. Communists are good at failing, in some ways at least, and they're doing that here. So if you want to see how this is evolving, I predict, read this article by Reuters. It'll be available soon on the show Twitter feed, which you can find by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. I predict that it won't be much longer before they just scrap it all together and they say, have as many kids as you want, have as many kids as you can, as they see their economic problems deepening because of this disastrous policy. Also, just for your good-to-know file, A Black Lives Matter St. Paul founder says that he resigned after learning what he calls the ugly truth. He was a founder in Minnesota. He resigned claiming that the organization isn't concerned about helping black communities or helping improve the education quality in Minneapolis, according to a video that he published online last week. His name is Richard Turner, the founder of a Black Lives Matter chapter in neighboring St. Paul. He started the branch in 2015, but he said he became disillusioned roughly a year after becoming an insider within the organization. And this is a video that he did that was released by Take Charge. It's a group that rejects various provisions promoted by Black Lives Matter, including critical race theory and linked claims that the United States is inherently racist. He said in the video, after a year on the inside, I learned that they had little concern for rebuilding black families, and they cared even less about improving the quality of education for students in Minneapolis. He said that was made clear when they publicly denounced charter schools alongside the teachers' union. I was an insider in Black Lives Matter, and I learned the ugly truth. The moratorium on charter schools does not support rebuilding of black families, but it does create barriers to a better education for black children. I resigned from Black Lives Matter after a year and a half, but I didn't quit working to improve black lives and access to a great education. Now, his testimony, if you want to call it that, is available in this video if you want to see it, and we'll have a link posted to that. This is courtesy of Jack Phillips, who wrote the article. You can find it there. Also, word of the wise, road rage, bad, don't do it. Another example of this from the New York Post, a road rage incident in Texas turned deadly when a motorcyclist pulled a gun in a road rage incident and only to be shot by the other driver in what authorities are treating as an act of self-defense. The chain of events unfolded on I-35 highway in Fort Worth, Texas, when the biker, 19-year-old Jack Derrick Gray, was weaving his way between rows of vehicles in an illegal way. It's known as lane splitting. At one point, an unidentified SUV driver began changing lanes, forcing Gray to swerve to avoid a collision. Gray passed several cars and parked his motorcycle, blocking the northbound traffic, then reportedly began walking back toward the SUV while pointing a handgun at the driver. The SUV driver told Gray to put down the gun because there were kids in his car, but the biker kept coming. So the other man drew his own handgun, opened fire, hitting Gray multiple times, according to reports, and killing him. Let that be a cautionary tale. I mean, what else can you say? How tragic and so utterly unnecessary. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Karen now in Caribou, Maine. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've never called in like this before, so this is kind of strange, but I was listening to all your conversations with the other young lady here a while ago and all your other, what you've been talking about, and it just, I've been struggling with my own daughter. She's 21. She was a college student, but she, during COVID, she took a year off, and she's planning going back to school this fall, but she met, while she was working this job here, she met this young lady, and they kind of hit it off. I thought at first they were just good friends, but now it's, like, become more than that, and she's... She used to have a boyfriend years ago, but he would kept pressuring her for sex, and it turned her totally against him, and I think it really hurt her. And now she's saying with this young lady, they don't have any plans to ever have sex or anything like that, that she says but she talks about marrying her, and I kept telling her how, you know, this is against God's laws, and she's like, well, where in the Bible does it say that? If we don't have sex, if we don't do those terrible acts, then it's not against God's laws. And I'm, it's hurting me so much because I love her so much. And, you know, I lost three babies. I had three miscarriages, and she was my dear daughter that I prayed so hard for that God gave me in. And now I don't know how to help her, and it's just, it's hurting so much.
Well, to kind of build on what an earlier caller said a few minutes ago, it's got to be couched in love. Let her know that you love her. You probably already have, I'm sure.
Oh, I tell her every day how much I love her.
Good, good, good. Keep doing that. Keep up the love and compassion. That always has to be present. So it's good that that's there. Now let's pause and think about this for a minute. So she's not interested in acting on these emotions that she feels for the other woman in a sexual way. At least that's what she said.
Right.
So what we're dealing with here is what we could call a species of friendship. She has a kind of friendship with this other woman. She's drawn to her. She's probably feeling love for her, and that love is romantic but not sexual. Is that what's going on?
Right.
Or at least what she's telling
you? Yes. Yes.
So I think we always have to stop and say that human beings were made by God for relationships. We are attracted to each other. Not everybody's attracted to everybody, but we are attracted to other people. And we seek to form friendships. Now, some friendships can become sexual in the context of marriage. That's the proper way for that. But friendship in general is a good thing. And to love somebody and to care about somebody is a good thing. It can be deformed and distorted, but in itself, in its essence, it's actually good. So you can affirm, it seems to me, as her mom, you can affirm, honey, I realize that you love her, that you have very strong feelings for her, and I can respect that. We have friends that we all care about. But you don't want to go in a direction where this friendship then becomes distorted, because then it's no longer seeking what's best for the other person. That's true love, of course, is to seek what's best for the other person. And if you wind up putting the other person or allowing yourself to be put in this position by the other person where you can fall into serious sin, then that's not really love. Now, I don't know how much that's going to change her way of thinking about it, but at least it lets her know that you don't object to her loving somebody, you know?
Yeah. But what about when she talks about marrying? I mean, marriage is between a man and a woman.
That's right. And that's, of course, the next step.
How do I convince her of this? Because she's not convinced of this.
I don't know that you can. This is the thing. This is a mystery to me. Why it is that some people, they may not see it, or they may see it, but they're not willing to accept it. It's hard to know which is which. I think most people deep down inside, they realize that there's something not quite right about this, but they won't admit it to themselves. But in any case, it's not your job to convince her. And you may say, what? It's not your job to convince her. It's your job to help encourage her, to give her good information, to love her, all of those things. Ultimately, it's God himself who will have to change her heart. He'll have to change the way she thinks about this. And that does happen, you know, for heterosexual people as well as homosexual people. It does happen. So I would advise patience, lots of love, lots of long talks if she's willing to do that with you. Stand your ground and let her know that you're not going to go along to get along, but that doesn't change the fact that you love her for who she is.
Yeah.
And that you'll always love her.
I have a younger daughter who's 17, and she says, Mom, if Diana marries this girl, then and she wants me to be there at her wedding, and I don't know if that's right or wrong to be there, because
right.
Then that's supporting
what... No, it's not right, because then it would be celebrating something that would be sinful. I mean, in the same way that if there were, let's say that your daughter wasn't in love with another woman, but she was in love with another man who just happened to be married with a wife and kids, and he and she are going to get married. Well, if you went to that wedding, which would be a sham, you would be celebrating something that's objectively wrong. So... I mean, in situations like this, you're not denying the fact that your daughter has love for somebody else. But, I mean, as I was saying earlier, you and I and probably everyone listening, we're all attracted in our own way to other people. And that attraction can sometimes be very, very powerful. And yet we still have to control our actions and curb our attractions so that we don't wind up running wild and indulging in our appetites whenever we feel them. We have to have self-control and say, this is not right for me. You know, she's married, I'm married, etc. We have to have that kind, we have to have fences around our emotions. Otherwise, they'll run wild with us. And that's true for heterosexuals as it is for homosexuals. There's no difference. We're all called to holiness. And unchastity and impurity is going to be an 8-lane superhighway away from holiness. So these are messages in your long talks with her, Karen, in your heart-to-heart with her, all of those ways in which you can impart this message to her. I would do it gently, lovingly, but do it, you know, and be persistent. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Is there something in the Bible, though? She says, where in the Bible can I find this? Is there a verse in the Bible you can point out to me that I can read to her?
Sure. Yeah, it's in, I quoted it earlier today, but it's in Matthew chapter 19. And this is where Jesus is speaking about marriage. So the context here is about divorce per se. But in verse 4, Jesus says, "Have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What God has joined together, therefore, let not man put asunder.'" So the context is divorce, but his message transcends the issue of divorce and remarriage, because he's talking about the very institution by God himself of the human race and how it will be propagated, the family unit, so to speak, and it's a man and a woman. And that is where Jesus speaks to this issue most pointedly. Now, St. Paul, he speaks about, in other passages, he talks about how those who are drunkards and liars and embezzlers.
Yeah, I did hear you saying that part.
Yeah, so that's part of it as well. That's much more specific. But Jesus himself did talk about that. Anyway, I'll leave it at that, Karen. I hope that's helpful to you. Hang in there. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Claire. And where is Claire? California. Hello, Claire.
Hi. I wanted to share my perspective on this. I am gay.
Sure.
I am actually married to a man. And I did that because I was terrified of living the homosexual lifestyle because of my upbringing was extremely conservative Catholic. And I knew it was just something that would have been shunned. But I guess what I want to share with all these callers that are calling in, I've never felt unloved by the Catholic Church. It's always been treated as a disorder, and that made me so angry at first that I was considered to have a disorder. But I'm also a recovering alcoholic, so it wasn't that far-fetched for me to finally come to terms with the fact that it's a disorder. And your analogies between alcoholics and homosexualities, I think, is fair. This is a scary thing to discuss on air, but...
I admire you for it, Claire, by the way. Thank you for your honesty and your courage. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. I just feel like there are so many people hurting out there, but I think, you know, there's a group that I'm in called Courage, and it's been so tremendously beneficial to me to go and feel God's love, but also be taught the truth in love. And I think that is what is missing. We can't not teach the truth, because we're talking about heaven and hell, and I want my eternity to be with God, and I don't want to act out on my whatever it is, whatever I'm genetically disposed, predisposed to it, whatever. I don't know, but I don't know. I do know that it is not my place to go against God's will, regardless of how I feel. And
would you mind if I asked you a few questions, Claire? That's good.
Sure, sure.
Okay. You know the term white knuckle. Are you white knuckling things right now in your marriage, or have you found peace and tranquility in your marriage, even though you still have this cross to carry?
I vacillate. I really do. There's times when I white knuckle it because it's hard. It's hard. But I go to Courage, and I go to Courage meetings, and that's where I get my reinforcement and my courage back to find peace with it.
For people who only maybe have heard of Courage or Encourage for family members, can you just talk a little bit about how they help you and what it is you receive from them that's encouraging for you?
Sure. It's a group. There's probably 10 of us and we meet through Zoom, and it's all confidential. It's a strictly 12-step program. It's based on the 12 steps of AA, but it's very much turning your will and your life over to the care of God. It is admitting and accepting the fact that your life has become unmanageable. And we share and we talk about our struggles, about our triumphs, about what's hindering us at the time. And the priest gives us guidance based on Catholic Church teachings as to what we can do to work through these issues, how to carry our cross with grace, but not white knuckle it. And it's just a great forum and it's all anonymous. It's like nobody's allowed to share anything that's discussed in the group outside of the group. And it's just really beneficial.
That's good. I mean, I've referred many people to Courage over the years, but it's nice to hear it from somebody who's benefiting from that resource.
Yes.
I'm so glad you called, Claire. I really am. And I hope that you feel that this program and Relevant Radio is a haven for you where we support you, we love you, we care about you, and we want to help however we can.
Thank you. Yes, I listen to you every morning. I listen to all the shows that I can possibly catch, and it is. And I've only heard love, and I do realize how important that is. And I think that that's something that, you know, as long as we stick with the truth in love, then I think we're going to be okay.
I agree. Well said. Well, thank you, Claire. Hang in there.
You're
welcome.
You
know, you've got my support and my prayers, and I look forward to talking to you again, hopefully. Thank you. Time out. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what kind of a conversation you're going to listen to. If you want to be one of those conversations with me, call 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Be right back. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio. That extra vehicle of yours, the one you're trying to sell, you could always donate it. Proceeds bring you more of your favorite Relevant Radio programs. It's easy. Just call 888-906-9069.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Hey, I've got something great for you. It's a free book, brand new. It's called Treasures of the Rosary, Reflections by Those Who Pray It Daily. And it's absolutely free. That means the book is free. It's about 130 pages. The book is free. There's no shipping. There's no handling. There's no charge whatsoever. It's free. F-R-E-E spells free. And you can get your free book by going to relevantradio.com/treasures. You just put in your name and where you want the book sent, and we'll send it to you once it's printed. It's a compilation of reflections on the rosary chosen by Father Rocky, our executive director. It includes the mysteries of St. Jose Maria, St. John Paul II's apostolic letter on the rosary, the 54-day rosary novena reflections, the litany of Our Lady of Loreto, how to pray the rosary, prayers like the Hail Holy Queen, the Memorare, etc. And wait, there's more. In addition to all these beautiful reflections, there's also beautiful images throughout the book. So it's something to see as well as read. And this could be yours simply by going to relevantradio.com/treasures. Now, it's one per household, please. And there will be several weeks. You know, I think they're saying allow up to 10 weeks for delivery. Because it's not printed yet, but we know from past experience just how fast these books blow out of the warehouse. So get yours by going there now and signing up. And there will be a button there where you can forward that information for your family and friends so that they can also get free books as well. You can't order one for them. You get one for you and your household, but you can forward it to them so that they can order their own free books if they'd like to do so. And that's waiting for you right now. Go to relevantradio.com/treasures. Real quick, before we go to the phones, I just want to draw your attention to something I saw yesterday. Two things, actually. One is Facebook, as you may know, has recently started a new program where they will ask you if you're concerned that somebody you know is becoming an extremist. And in Facebook speak, that means white supremacist, conservative, all the ways that they think of people who don't agree with them. So they're asking you to let them know, how can you help that person if you think somebody's becoming an extremist? So I thought this was clever. This is Elena on Twitter. She posted this. She said, I'm glad Facebook is finally tackling these issues, and it's a spoof, but it's funny. Are you concerned that someone you know is an Albigensian heretic? We care about Cathar extremists promoting dualistic cosmology and the belief that all human spirits are angels trapped in the material realm of the evil God, destined to be reincarnated until they achieve salvation through a death rite masquerading as Christian baptism. How can you help? Click on the link below to sign up for the Albigensian Crusade. Alternatively, you can join the Dominican Order and learn how to minister and preach to the Cathars. So it's a spoof on a goofy Facebook thing. The other thing is not a spoof. It's not goofy. It's really cool, and I want you to look at it. It's a picture posted by a fellow by the name of Denny Burke. I don't know him, but he posted this picture. I've seen it around before, but it's a picture of like several hundred. I mean, it's a huge crowd scene. And what you see in the picture is like several hundred Germans, men and women, military and civilian, and they all have their hands out in the Hitler salute, except for one guy. This one guy in the middle of all these other Nazi sympathizers with their arms out saluting Hitler, he's standing there with a grimace on his face and his arms are folded. And the caption is, "When the time comes, be this guy." Powerful picture. So my caption to that was, "That time is now." And I'd like you to see this. So you'll find it on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. Check it out. Let's go to Joseph in Oaklawn, Illinois. Joseph, I know you've been waiting a long time. Thank you and welcome.
Oh, no, my pleasure. The questions that are given to you and how you answer them are worth it. They're usually better, always better questions than I have, actually. They're just very enlightening. And the way you illuminate that for me is just crystal. It's really a grand slam. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're just incredible. You have a gift, my friend. You have a gift.
Thank you. Thank you. So what's on your mind and how can I be of service?
Well, first, I just want to say woe to the children of those times. I mean, the apparitions. I mean, these poor kids and these parents are having to go through this. This is unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
And the people leaving the church, I mean, a lot of people don't believe in a lot of things the church believes, and they maybe shouldn't go, if you ask me. But my question is, did Paul rebuke Peter when they joined together or they went at the same time? Can you enlighten me on that?
Sure. Well, by his own account, St. Paul himself says in Galatians 2 that he did rebuke Peter. So here's what he says. But when Cephas came, and that's referring to Peter, when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he ate with the Gentiles, but when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. That's the Judaizers. And with him, the rest of the Jews acted insincerely, so that even Barnabas was carried away by their insincerity. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas before all, if you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you compel the Gentiles to live like Jews? So that was the rebuke where he says he withstood him to his face. That's what you're thinking of, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so there are the bare bones of it. And what about that is causing some trouble?
Well, I've heard different. I've heard that it wasn't that way. And I wanted that clarified. Maybe I just misheard that. It could have been. But you clarified that, and that was my thinking. But I thought I heard something different.
I can offer some thoughts on this if you want, because there are a couple ways to look at it. Okay, so that passage again, that's in Galatians chapter 2, begins in verse 11. So it's clear that this did happen. St. Paul said that it happened, and the backdrop for this is found in the book of Acts, because we saw that in Acts chapter 10. Peter received a vision from God in the form of a dream telling him, and the words were, "Rise up, Peter, kill and eat." And what he was dreaming of was this large tarp that was filled with all kinds of animals, including animals that were unclean, like pigs, for example. And he perceived that this was God telling him, "Kill and eat." In other words, you don't anymore have to regard these animals as ritually unclean, like pigs or shellfish or other animals. And so he received this revelation directly from God, and this was part of the realization or the revelation that you did not have to become Jewish to be Christian. You did not have to be circumcised to become Christian. You did not have to keep kosher to be a Christian. And that was what the Judaizers were pressing. They wanted to make Christianity sort of a subset of Judaism, and God revealed that. And at the Council of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15, St. Peter, he explained this, and St. James, who was the Bishop of Jerusalem, he said, yes, that's right, and I judge that we should do as God has revealed to Peter. So St. Paul, knowing this, was exasperated with Peter, because in his behavior, what he was doing, seemingly out of human respect, was he was afraid of the Judaizers, that party, And so as a way to avoid clashing with them, even though before they showed up, he was eating and drinking and having table fellowship with the Gentiles, out of fear, it seems, he drew back so that he wouldn't get into a hassle with these Judaizers. But there's more to this story, and it's a fascinating and interesting interplay, because St. Paul, what he did, if we just take it on the bare bones of what he says, he did the right thing. He was correct in rebuking Peter. Even though Peter was the first pope, he was correct in reminding him and remonstrating with him that he was acting in a hypocritical fashion. But there's more to it, because it's also possible, and this is one of the theories that some of the church fathers said, was that Peter actually wanted this to happen for two reasons. One, for a show of humility, and not to be showy, but to actually demonstrate humility in leadership, but also to show the church that Paul was a true apostle. Because as we're told, when St. Paul had, as Saul, had his conversion, and he wound up converting to Christ, they were very suspicious of him, and nobody would really accept him because they thought this was just a trick. So one view of this incident in Galatians 2 is that it was St. Peter's way of allowing this rebuke to take place so that it would show, well, look, if even Peter is willing to accept what St. Paul is saying, then he must be one of us. But there's more. Here's another part of it, and that is what St. Paul himself said with regard to circumcision. Now, you may say, circumcision? How do we get to circumcision? Well, he says this in Romans chapter 14, and we're also going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8, but listen to this. He says, then let us no longer judge one another, but rather resolve never to put a stumbling block or a hindrance in the way of a brother. I know and am convinced in the Lord Jesus that nothing is unclean in itself. Still, it is unclean for someone who thinks it is unclean. If your brother is being hurt by what you eat, your conduct is no longer in accord with love. Do not, because of your food, destroy him for whom Christ died. So do not let your good be reviled, for the kingdom of God is not a matter of food and drink, but of righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. Whoever serves Christ in this way is pleasing to God and approved by others. Let us then pursue what leads to peace and to building up one another. For the sake of food, do not destroy the work of God. Everything is indeed clean, but it is wrong for anyone to become a stumbling block by eating. It is not good to eat meat or drink or wine or do anything that causes your brother to stumble. So you see here, Paul is actually saying another truth, and that is St. Peter basically did that. He did not want, and that's one way to read this, he did not want his Judaizing brothers to stumble. So he withdrew from table fellowship with the Gentiles as a way to deal more tenderly with them. So that's a positive reading of that situation. And then one final thing to take into account is that St. Paul refers to the need not to curry favor. So he says in Galatians 1, he says, am I now currying favor with human beings or God? Or am I seeking to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I wouldn't be a slave of Christ. So obviously, he's saying that we should not be doing this for human respect. And he says in Galatians 5, in verse 2, he says, it is I, Paul, who am telling you that if you have yourself circumcised, Christ will be of no benefit to you. And then guess what happened? And we read this in Acts chapter 16, when he reached Derbe and Lystra, where there was a disciple named Timothy, who was the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. The brothers in Lystra and Iconium spoke highly of him, and Paul wanted him to come along with him. Now listen to this. On account of the Jews in that region, Paul had him circumcised, for they all knew that his father was Greek. So here we see St. Paul doing something even more dramatically, I would argue, hypocritical, because on the one hand, he's saying, look, if you're doing this for human respect, if you care about what people think, that's wrong. And if you have yourself circumcised, Christ will be of no benefit to you. And what did he do with Timothy? He had him circumcised because he was afraid of the Jews in that region. So it's, you might say, a double-edged sword insofar as what Paul rebuked Peter for, Paul himself was guilty of. And I would say in a more spectacular way. So that's part of the backstory. I hope that helps, Joseph. Is that a little too much of an answer?
Oh, no, it's great. And what I missed, I'll just listen to on the podcast.
You got it. Well, thank you for that, Joseph. Great to talk to you. We are out of time for this hour, but we have a whole hour ahead of us. It's coming up here in just a minute, and we'll get to your phone calls. I really do appreciate your patience. I know many of you are waiting, but we're going to get to your calls ASAP. The number to dial is 888-914-9149. Interesting poll that came out, a new poll that was conducted just recently shows that 69% of people who are polled here in the United States say that they believe that America is the greatest country to live in. Now, that's a fall from 15 points higher a decade ago when the same poll was given. In those days, 84% of respondents said the U.S. was the greatest. But this year, still 69% feel that way. And as you might imagine, it runs across party lines. We'll get that link posted for you. It's from the New York Post, and take a look at it. I think it tells a tale about where we are today. I'll be right back with Hour 3 right after this.